Well, kia ora everybody. Welcome along to the Short Ball Rugby Pass Podcast. Scotty and Mills with you here. Millsy, I've got something to talk to you about.
What's that?
Distressed jeans, your thoughts.
Oh, yes.
Are you a distressed jeans man?
I don't mind them. Yeah, I don't mind them actually. I've got a couple of pairs.
So, you see, I buy three pairs of jeans every year and maybe four black t-shirts. That's pretty much my wardrobe sorted. I went to a shop that sells a particular brand of jeans. It's not a well-known brand of jeans, but they just fit me because I'm a fuller-figured man, as you know. And I went there and I bought three pairs of jeans. Now, two pairs of the jeans were the same price, very reasonable price. But the third pair, when I went to the checkout, which were the same size, the same style of jean, they were $50 more than the other jeans. And I didn't think too much about it. I thought, oh, well, whatever, might be the new range, whatever, what's going on here. Only when I got them home, I realized they were $50 more because there's a hole where the bottom of the pocket is and then there's another hole on the shin. What the fuck is that about? I've just got charged $50 for less fabric than the other two jeans.
Well, why didn't you try them on?
Because I didn't need to try them on. That's the whole reason I go to the shop and buy this particular brand of jeans, because I know my size, I know the style, I know what they look like.
Shit,
you're looking at the hole right there. Look.
That is styly, mate.
Look, I got $50. Look. Look. For a hole. For a hole in my jeans.
You reckon it should be a $50 discount?
Because there's a hole in it. I think there should be a discount for being a hole. I don't understand the whole just distressed jeans. I know, like, I know a lot of people listening will know, you get hole in the groin area after a while through wear and tear, especially when you've got chunky thighs like me. You know, you get jean chafing. But I've never been charged $50 because someone has ripped the jeans before they have been put on.
There's a bit of colour around it too, mate. So
I know.
From the dye too, mate.
What the hell?
They look damn good, though.
Thanks, mate. I appreciate it. But is this fashion? Is this what we're paying for now?
Well, mate, you're asking the wrong person. Well,
you just said you own two pairs. Were your distressed jeans more expensive than the jeans without holes in them? They were.
Well, I don't know where you shop.
If you're wearing that true religion shit, I'm ending it. I'm ending our relationship.
I don't. I bought a couple pairs from Texas Rodeo, actually.
Did you?
Yeah.
That shut 10 years ago.
No, it's not. It's down in Newmarket.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Texas Radio and the Big Beat. I thought that closed down like a decade ago.
I'm sitting here. Is it still called that then? Maybe it's not.
I don't know. Anyway, random chat to get us underway. Today on the pod, we're going to talk about last weekend's round of footy and also looking ahead, a couple of other issues that have popped up as well. Let's get into it. Mills on the short ball today. The Highlanders, far too classy for the Stormers. Mm. I need to ask this question. The Stormers have now lost 10 straight on New Zealand soil. Why are they so scared about playing in New Zealand? They are massive human beings. What is the mental blockage they're up against?
Yeah, I don't know. It seemed kind of weird, but I was actually quite impressed with the way they played. I mean, they made a couple of sort of real basic mistakes. They got up on that lead, you know, just before half time, and then they sort of let the Highlanders come back in. A couple of kicking options, then perhaps they shouldn't have done. So it kind of just seemed like they, as soon as they got ahead and they were getting some momentum, they just wanted to give the game back.
9 minutes they spent inside the Highlanders red zone. 9 minutes inside the 22, might have been 9:20 or 9:18, whatever it was. It's 40 points worth of time inside the 22. Yeah. They seem to have a total disconnect when it comes to finishing off promising moves. Their offload game is on point.
Yeah.
In fact, three of the Stormers are in the top six offloaders in this competition. Yeah, yeah. SP Maria was very good. Damien Delendi, I think, is finding his groove again. Damien Willemser, a 19-year-old fly half. I thought he was absolutely magic in moments in that game. But there's got to be something.
He wanted a couple of scraps too, didn't he?
He did want a couple. Well, everyone wanted to scrap Aaron Smith. We're going to get to the nugget in just a moment. I don't get why it's so hard for them to close the deal.
Yeah, sometimes they seem a bit erratic, and I suppose it's the game they sort of bring sometimes. You know, when they're in, you know, over when they're playing in Cape Town, you know, they can get away with it because they've got, you know, the crowd behind them, and often that lifts them. Whereas here, they just seem to think, you know, something's going to click all of a sudden, and they just go off their game because they have. You're right, your ball carriers are massive. You know, the only thing I probably would say that's a little bit different is probably the athleticism in the Highlanders team. You know, those guys use a bit more footwork, the white locks of the world, you know, so that's probably the only difference. But I just don't understand, you know, why it's not clicking for the Highlanders, and particularly
for the Stormers,
Particularly here in New Zealand.
I'm glad you brought up Whitelock. 24 tackles from him. It's a competition high last round from Luke Whitelock. He is. I've got a crush on this bloke. I think he is one of the toughest loose forwards in the world right now, Luke Whitelock. And I know all the headlines over the weekend were for another bloke, Kita Ioane. And yes, he's showing his worth with ball in hand. But no one gets about his business as quietly, as ruthlessly, and as efficiently as Luke Whitelock. 24 tackles against a really big side. He must have spent the entire rest of the weekend on ice.
Yeah, I know. And he started off a little bit slow, but you're right. He just does all that stuff. I mean, in the first game against the Blues, but he just does all the hard work. And, you know, probably one thing that sort of epitomizes him is when people don't talk about you, that means there's something that you've done right, you know. And certainly with him, the tackle count, I think there was even a moment where I think the Stormers tried to run it out from their own in goal area.
That's not good.
That is not good when Luke Whitelock just comes, you know, straight through those uprights.
That's it.
But he was massive. He was massive for them, and he'll continue to grow like that too.
He's got Adam, George, and Sam. I mean, that man has had to fight for every dinner he's had. You don't mess with him. Look, the Highlanders probably should have scored maybe three or four more tries as well. Ben Smith was disallowed on a crawl.
Cool. Yeah.
Jackson Hemelport dropped the ball on the goal line. Yeah. Waisaki Naholo grew toes where his fingers used to be. they're all those mates. Still scored a double, his third straight double against the Storms.
He was awesome.
He was awesome. But I do wonder about the Stormers. I know they're low on personnel at the moment. In fact, they had to call players and they had no one left. They originally went for a 6-2 split on the bench and ended up going 5-3 just out of sheer necessity.
Yeah.
And they had some illness during the week as well. Peter Steftu Toy, who probably shouldn't have played given he was knocked out against the Crusaders, but he was in line to play, then illness intervened. So I know there's a little bit of a perfect storm for Robbie Fleck, Paul True, and the rest of the coaching staff, but even so, 10 straight defeats in New Zealand, I think that's beneath the level of talent that the Stormers have.
Yeah, and I suppose when you put it like that, I don't think the Stormers would have gone into this tour thinking, you know, we've lost so many games and there's a possibility we'll come out with 10 straight. But, you know, with the talent that they've got and certainly the game plan that they're actually trying to implement, you know, they're a fantastic team. They're just not clicking on the day.
Yeah, it was really interesting talking to a few of the Stormers guys. I think there is a lot of respect for the way New Zealand rugby goes about its business. And what I mean by that is the fact that everyone seems to be travelling in the same direction. You know, we brought up and broke the news about the All Black camps, and we know that there's been some low-level dissent over that from a Super Rugby point of view. We know it's not ideal for all the teams. But by and large, every school coach is trying to get his players to play a certain way because they know that's going to give them the best chance to get in an academy program, which is going to give them the best chance of playing provincial rugby, which is going to give them the best chance of playing Super Rugby, which is the only way they're going to be All Blacks. It seems to be from the age of around 12, 13 in this country, perhaps even younger, you're on a pathway. You're playing a certain style of rugby. And speaking to the Stormers in South Africa right now, it is just not thus. The political divisions in the game, it is riven with different characters, different egos. No one seems to be thinking, if we all got our heads around this and decided on what is the South African style of play, we would again be a world force. You cannot call the South African rugby a world force at the moment, given the fact that these teams keep coming to New Zealand, keep coming on Australasian tours, like the Bulls last weekend against the Reds. They should never have lost that game.
Right.
You know, I think it's going to be tough. Do you see the merit or otherwise in what New Zealand rugby does vis-a-vis what South African rugby seems to be doing right now?
Oh, I think there's been a massive change in South African rugby in terms of the way they've played. And in some cases, they've probably lost a little bit of the identity from the past. I mean, the two particular teams I'm talking about is obviously the Lions and the Stormers. Now, they've gone totally different in terms of the way they play the game compared to the traditional sort of South African teams. You know, the Lions were, you know, they used to kick a lot. Now they've shown a little bit of flair. The thing that's the difference between us and them is that the fact we're united right from the very beginning. From 12, 13-year-olds, kids are learning how to offload. They're learning how to, you know, step and things like that. And it's just a more exciting way to play. We've got a bit more backyard. It's not covered in barbed wire and stuff like that that perhaps we can play but play outside with. But, I mean, you're right. We don't have those sort of challenges that they do, the political ones where some, you know, someone's There's ego everywhere.
I know, but it's more than race politics. It's about coaching ideologies, playing ideologies. You know, I know that race-based politics in South Africa have a big part to play, and I understand why that is. And surely anyone who has even a skerrick of knowledge of South Africa's racial history will understand why policies are being put in place to try and make this a more fair, a more representative game. But it's not about playing stocks. It's about playing styles.
Yeah.
You have to actually understand that you are all trying to funnel your talent into the same direction to create a pinnacle team, which in South Africa's case is the Springboks, in New Zealand's case is the All Blacks. Yeah, the one exciting thing for me about the weekend, one of the most exciting things was Salman Moidart, the former South African schoolboys captain, making his Super Rugby debut. I mean, this kid's, 20 years old? You've seen Happy Gilmore, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know the really large guy, the real big giant?
The giant
in Happy Gilmore?
Can't say I've seen
anything. No, you know the guy. You will know the guy I'm talking about. Salman Moidart is basically him.
Oh.
This kid is 20. He came out and started melting people. I think in one stage he made 4 consecutive tackles. If that is the shape of the talent at your disposal, man, you guys have got a lot of reason in South Africa to be really happy about what could be.
Yeah.
This kid was something else, man. I just sitting in the commentary box going, What?
Well, why do they go off that then? You know,
I don't know.
It just sort of seems like they just don't seem to, they sort of forget about that and go to a different sort of type of player when they're so suited to that sort of style, aren't they?
Well, Damian Willemse, Salman Moidart. I mean, if that's two of the guys you can form the next World Cup team around, and not just the next World Cup, but the one after, you're in good shape, man. Absolute destructive lock, and I think Damian Willemse's got the happiest feet of any first five going at the moment, certainly in the Southern Hemisphere. Highlanders go to 2-0, and they'll take on the Crusaders this week. We'll get to this week's games in just a moment on the short ball, but before we do, we better have a look at the Crusaders Hurricanes. Have you ever seen a Crusaders team get absolutely blown off the park in the opening quarter like they did on Saturday night in Wellington? They were not ready for the emotion the Hurricanes played with.
Yeah, and I don't think anyone was, really, to be totally honest. We sort of talked up the way the Crusaders absorb pressure.
Yeah.
It just sort of seemed like the Hurricanes just got right into them. It was interesting to hear also after the game that, you know, Chris Boyd said they didn't want to, you know, take them, make sure that they didn't want to have too many sort of set pieces. And that really, you know, we've spoken about the way that, you know, Razor's gone away from not just, you know, focusing on your set piece, but the way the Crusaders have played an open style of game. But in the case in the weekend, they just sort of strangled him, you know, and that try that Eve scored, you know, you never see a Crusaders line out, you know, dysfunction like that. And so, and that just set the tempo for the Hurricanes.
Bit of a serious issue to discuss while we're on that Crusaders Hurricanes game, and from a mitigation point of view, losing your captain and vice captain.
Yeah.
Now, Sam Whitelock took a knock. Warren Crotty obviously took a knock and was taken straight out of the game. Sam Whitelock took a knock, got back to his feet. Next stoppage in play, he was taken out of the game, taken for an HIA, didn't pass, sat out the game. Yeah, I spoke to him after. He said, "Oh, I was trying to stay on." Yeah, you know, and it's like, I can understand why players want to stay in the game. Now, he got taken off. He had no choice in the matter. Compare that with the Kian Healy incident and the Six Nations on the weekend. The Kian Healy incident, to me, is an absolute disgrace. Yeah. How you left... And, you know, what's even worse for me is Kian Healy then gets put in one of the teams of the week from a media outlet in the Northern Hemisphere after the Six Nations. He shouldn't be in the team of the week because he shouldn't have been in the game. The man got cleaned up. He's staggering around to the next breakdown. It is sickening to watch. And we all gloss over it in the joy of Ireland's Six Nations victory. Enough's enough.
Yeah.
Enough is enough.
Yeah.
You know what? If anything takes the gloss off a win, it is endangering a player.
Yeah. And there will be people out there that will say, "Oh, you know, he's tough. He's this. He carried on as that. You know, he's a hard
man."
You're right. But are they going to be the same people that sort of say the same thing in about 20 years' time when he can't speak?
Yeah, and you're feeding him through a straw.
Exactly.
Look, I know that, I am being inflammatory here because when are we going to learn? And, you know, people talk about New Zealand rugby being arrogant in terms of wanting to form relationships with clubs in the north. you know, that they know are going to look after their players, that they know are going to have a duty of care. And they were called arrogant when they came out with that move. I just think they're being cautious.
Yeah.
Because if that's the level of care at international level in the Northern Hemisphere, then God help us. What's the level of care at a private club?
I just don't understand why they – I mean, isn't there a standard rule?
It's got to be.
In world rugby, that sort of happens. You come off and you get assessed and that's it, but he just carried on.
But someone's got a video clip of this, so that means – now, and I want to be fair about this. So I remember a couple of years ago I wrote a piece about Josh Honick in a Highlanders Crusaders game, and he came off for an HIA, even though he was snoring on the field. He should have never been HIA. He should have been out of the game. But he was taken out of the game at the referee's behest. He passed an HIA. He came back onto the field. And I wrote at the time how disappointing that was. And I remember being confronted with a couple of medical staff who said, look, it's not our fault. We couldn't see it. Now, I understand if one person doesn't see it, one person at ground level on the other side of the field doesn't see it. But everyone else saw it. There are monitors in coaches' boxes. There's monitors in the TMO booth that they can rewind at their own leisure. There are monitors on the sideline. Mm. There are cameras everywhere. Now, are you saying to me that no one in the management of that game or the administration of either of those teams or the refereeing team saw him stumbling after taking that head knock? Yeah. Are you saying no one saw that? Because I find that absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah, well, no one's – well, people are pretending they didn't see it now because they've just glossed over it because of Ireland's win. But
please.
I mean, I don't know, mate. I mean, you don't – what else can you actually do? Did World Rugby need to – stamp down on
that
this,
competition or? Is under their jurisdiction. Yes,
well, then they
should.
Then they need to, you know.
Yeah, they do. And we need sanctions on the people involved in the management of these games. Because if this continues to happen, then we are either willfully ignorant as a sport of the harm it can cause. Mm. And those particular incidents too, as we have seen as the Zach Test retirement showed in America, he took a head knock, stayed on the field, took the next one, had a brain bleed.
Yeah.
Those are dangerous moments for players in the game. I was so stoked to see Sam Whitelock taken out of that game. Obviously, they're not taking any risk with Ryan Crotty. I know it's an imperfect science here. Yeah. I know concussion is an imperfect science, but I have spoken to people who work with head injuries on a daily basis, and there is, and there seems to be a denial that CTE might be a problem in rugby union. Let me tell you why you can deny that, and you can deny it out of hand, is because no rugby brain has ever been studied.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't wait for the first one, because if that's not Swiss cheese, I don't know what it's going to be. Look, I'm not saying you can take every contact out of the game, but we need to be cognizant of the fact that we are all the guardians of this game. We are the custodians of its traditions, and we must be vigilant when it comes to head knocks. Yeah. It is just how hard this game is right now, how many times these guys are pounding into each other. You've got to just take every caution you can, every precaution you can, and I hope they do, because I don't want to see another Kian Healy incident. I thought it was bad enough in the Lions series watching Alan Wynne-Jones.
Yeah.
You know, I thought that was crazy, but it seems like nothing is changing, and I don't know when it will, Millsy. When does it change?
Well, it's obviously going to take some really big incident to happen and someone become a vegetable before that does. Well, I hope not, you know?
I don't want that. No one wants that. Let's move back to more positive things. The Blues won a game. You said last week on the pod that maybe getting out of the country, getting together, short turnaround might be the best thing that could happen to them. I said they need to win given the calibre of team they put out. They didn't just win. That is a spectacularly good win for the Blues.
It was, mate, that is an awesome win. The fact that they were down by so much to keep coming back. They gave a couple of tries away,
sure.
Also, and I mean, but that's possibly what they needed to get away. And what a country to go to,
what a team to beat,
you know? Hey, wow, exactly. And they did it well. A lot of guys stood up. Obviously, they didn't have their captain with them. We spoke about Ioane before, both the Ioane brothers. Did you? What did you make of Rico in the centres?
Oh, I think he looks really good in the centres.
Yeah, I was a little bit worried that he might not have the distribution skills, but he showed some good flair there.
I mean, I don't think you can really find a bad place for Rico either on the right, the left, or in midfield. He's such a big boy.
Yeah.
What was really interesting for me is, you know, the Blues having Sonny Bill there, you think you've got your bully, but because of his offload rate, 7 offloads in that game, a guy like Rico Ioane running off your shoulder at that, and we've seen and that did, at Rugby World Cup 2015, yeah. Sonny Bill will float into Ma'a, that sort of combination. I don't think Rico's an out-and-out bully in midfield yet.
No, yet.
But if he keeps playing there, he could be. Yeah. The production from the back was outstanding for the Blues. Yeah. Melani Nunai ran 133. Michael Collins ran 124. 250 metres between those two guys.
Yeah.
That's a significant impact from the backfield.
Yeah, I was Melani Nunai, talented kid, very talented kid. And once he gets his offload and sights properly, mm-hmm. you know, he's still giving away a couple of those little ones where it's just costing them a bit. Well, again, it cost him a try on the weekend. But the way he's running and the meters he's running, he's elusive. He just needs to start. And the skill that he's actually doing isn't that complicated to be able to, you know, get a hold of the end of the offload. He just needs to be a little bit more patient and sight his player first. But apart from that, he was fantastic. Collins coming back. So
what do you think of Collins? I really like Collins in this team. I like the way Michael Collins plays. I think he's a really safe player. And what I mean by that, he's just a good decision maker.
Yeah, steady. And he turns up, you know, Sonny Bill Williams broke, you know, once he was there, right there off his shoulder, got an offload. And, you know, there he was in the 22. Did he need to offload? No, held it, built patience, and that's what you need. You know, a guy like that at the back that's making sound decisions. And then, you know, I like Duffy too. You know, he's a little bit off his game at the moment, but two similar guys that make really good decisions. And then you've got someone like, you know, Nainai on the other side, who's, you know, you want him to sort of show his free spirit and go out there and express himself. And so it just balances them out good. But I certainly think at the moment, you know, Collins is the man to be at the back.
You look at the Blues at the moment, their production so far the season has been really good. Maybe not quite their points production at this stage. They're still conceding more than they're scoring, but 31 points offensively per game this year. 542 metres, they lead the competition in metres. Mm. They are second in defenders beaten. They are third in clean breaks. So they are doing so much well. They certainly lead in offloads per game, and we know that SBW is pretty much responsible for most of that. And they're right up on the top of the stats, second in passes. So they're playing with a lot of freedom.
Yeah.
And I know that's not always going to work for you, because the big concern for me with the Blues is still their tackling percentage, 81%. Mm. And they have to make the fewest tackles in their opening three games than any other team. So just 81 tackles per game made, but 19 missed. That if they get that right, then we're looking at a complete team.
I think if they can get the attack side of it, and those the attackers, when it's, I mean, they're making big, huge meters, they're gaining them and things like that. It's what I just spoke about before. That one little pass, you know, a turnover, or someone makes a big mistake, bang, they're back down the other end. And so predominantly the tackles that they are missing are scrambling stuff. Mm. You know, when they've made their own mistakes, then they've got to try and get back. The line's disjointed, and so they're actually putting a lot more pressure on themselves. So if they can just get that, I mean, yes, you know, the 81 is not fantastic, and they need to, you know, try and fix it. But I think if they can just sort out a lot of their...
So you're saying that most of their missed tackles are coming in their transition D, and if they can get that figured out.
Yeah, and that's the thing. If they can sort that out, I think they'll be fine. At the moment, we're seeing a few offloads go to ground. Some of them are turning into points. But you kind of just get the feeling that once those ones sticky, I mean, it was evident in the Chiefs a few years ago when everyone started offloading, what didn't quite go right, but all of a sudden it just clicked. And when it did, you know, they were just fantastic. And so there's a similarity there in the Blues, I think.
Yeah, but you had sort of any. Anything clicks when Sid of any clicks.
Anything happens when Sid of any clicks, mate.
No, I still love that story about Sid of any Sivivatu. I think Stephen Donald moved in with him, and he used to sit in his lounge with all the heaters on in the house. It's the middle of summer, under a blanket. They got a power bill. I think the first month's power bill was $3,000.
Oh shit!
I think Beaver moved out that week. $3,000 power bill, instead of any. Okay, you're on the short ball with Mills and Scotty. We'll move on to round five, week five, and the two Kiwi games. The Hurricanes obviously on a bye, which they will love after that victory over the Crusaders. The Chiefs taking on the Bulls on Friday night. Speaking of teams that struggle in New Zealand, the Bulls are no different to the Stormers. And losing to the Reds last weekend must have been an absolute ball ache for them. John Mitchell said after the first win against the Hurricanes that they were trying to lay down some foundations. Yeah. Well, those foundations look a bit shaky all of a sudden. But they're up against the Chiefs side that I don't know how they won at Eden Park in round two. I still don't. 16 injuries, some of them season-ending. 16 injuries after 2 weeks of footy. So they're coming off a bye and their first home game at FMG Waikato. Are the Bulls a chance here, or are we just going to see the Chiefs machine roll on?
If there's ever a chance the Bulls are going to win, it's this weekend.
Got to be, right?
It has to be, because they are. The Chiefs are depleted. You know, I mean, how they won at Eden Park, that is just pure heart, you know. And now, yes, they might get Haynes back this weekend, but 16 players, when you're talking about, you know, how many guys are out and who they have to bring the new guys in, I mean, this is now the Bulls' chance to get in there and actually win. They should be favourites, really.
What? The Bulls are favourites against the Chiefs at home?
16 guys out.
Understood. But
I hope the Chiefs are listening to this. They might get up again.
Yeah, I mean, I can't believe, I can't believe you'd say that about your Chiefs. That's crazy. The Bulls aren't doing a lot with the ball. That's the unfortunate thing, sort of carrying-wise. They're making some metres, but I just don't know if they've got enough deception on attack to fool that Chiefs defensive line. The one thing I know about the Chiefs defense, it's going to be up and in your face. Sam Kane's going to make 6,000 tackles, and Brody Retallick will return this week as well. Yeah. So you've got that extra hurdle to climb for the Bulls. I know what you're saying about the Bulls, and I know they're probably going to have a good week down there in Hamilton. John Mitchell will like being home. Marty Veal's come across from New York to help with that set piece, which is great for him and for the Bulls as well. I can't see the Chiefs losing this at home. Not first up.
No, I mean, apart from the fact they got lots of injuries, I'm more interested in who plays 10 for the Chiefs, and because that'll probably, you know, steer the way the Chiefs end up playing. One thing's for sure is...
Well, Stevenson will be back this week, won't he? I mean, I'm not sure how serious that injury was. He certainly wasn't carried off the park. I haven't heard any update on where he's at. But if he's fit, we go back to usual, don't we? Damian McKenzie back in a 10?
Yeah, you'd think so. But if he's not there, then, you know, do they Yeah, Falcon still stays there, or, you know, what do they actually do? But I'd like to see the Chiefs win. The thing is, as I said before, you know, this is the best chance the Bulls will have at actually getting a W.
Well, I got the Chiefs this week and then got Crusaders next week. So of those two games, and given, as you said, the strength of each roster at the moment, number of injuries involved, you'd have to pick the Chiefs as their easiest fixture on this tour. Let's stay with the Crusaders. Millsy on the short ball to wrap things up today. Taking on the Highlanders, I love the Southern Classic. I think it has become the must-watch local matchup in Super Rugby.
Do they get the All Blacks back?
Yeah.
Oh, they do. So they're just on that.
Just one camp, a foundation day.
Just the one day?
Just one day. Foundations, Millsy.
Foundations?
Foundations.
Build those foundations.
You've got to build the foundations. Crusaders taking on the Highlanders. So they're going to go from 19 of them who are involved in a one-day camp with the All Blacks, all sharing philosophies and what they want to achieve with the All Blacks, to
by the way,
belting 10 sacks of shit out of each other on Saturday night in Dunedin. The Crusaders would go into most contests saying, we've got you at the set piece, not against the Highlanders. 100% scrum for the Highlanders this year. Clark Dermody must be sitting there thinking he is God right now. Amazing.
Well, both teams have got great scrum coaches, haven't they? But you're right. When you get 100% in your scrums, Durham's just licking his lips. And so, you know, the Crusaders coming off a loss, you know, they'll lick their wounds. They'll know that the place that they actually got beaten up is probably their heart, you know, their set piece. And, you know, they're all taken to school by a very good Hurricanes team. So it's leading up to a massive game.
The one thing about the Highlanders, and you mentioned that before about working on their individual skills, I know it's been something that Aaron Major has really focused on. In recent seasons, they've had a latch game, ball runner, you latch on, you drive through the ruck, you start again. What they figured out was that the Crusaders were tackling the latcher, leaving the ball carrier isolated, and then the likes of Matt Todd straight over the ball, you're getting your turnovers. And in those two very close games last year, you could see that in effect. So they've really worked on their stepping game as individual forwards, their offload game in the tackle. You're not seeing so much connection with the ball runner and support player. I wonder if that's going to go some way to giving them the edge at Forsyth Bar. The game last year, they should have won. They were 20 points up, and they allowed the Crusaders back. Yeah, this is a Crusaders side that would be really rattled by what happened in Wellington. I know they've got the confidence to overcome that, but the Highlanders will be licking their lips ready for this. What did Ruby Tui call their defence? The Wolfpack?
The Wolfpack.
They'll love it, because if the Hurricanes showed anything, it's that the rush, when executed properly, can really shut down the Crusaders' ability to move the ball.
Yeah, and Aaron Major's a smart man. You know, even when he was as a player, he was, you know, tactically sound. So he would have looked at that game very hard and thought, you know, here's some opportunities that we can actually get the Crusaders. The points that you bring up, fantastic, because, you know, when you often get isolated from your support player, you know, that's when it's, you know, time while it's on to actually steal the ball. Okay, the Highlanders now can hold on to the ball a bit longer. But the thing that, you know, you talk about other individual skills, the thing that really excites me about the Highlanders is their kicking game and how spot on that is. You know, when you're box kicking like Aaron Smith does from basically the middle of the field, and he's getting it spot on for guys like Ben Smith and Waisaki Naholo, who had a fantastic game in the weekend. I mean, it allows those guys to get up and claim their ball back. All of a sudden, the momentum's changed. You know, he's picking his moments. You know, Aaron Smith, left foot, sort of chip over the top after a penalty tap. And so those individual skills are really starting to show. Even Waisaki Naholo, I think he even sort of did a backhand sort of pass off the ground.
When doesn't he do something crazy?
Well, maybe that's not
Tevita Nambura on the other side as well.
Exactly.
The Outer Islanders. Now, I'm glad you brought it up because I wanted to finish today's short ball on Aaron Smith. A lot of comments about how much he chatted through the game last week. You know, I swear, the more he yells at someone, the better he gets.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
Because he finished that game as if he had not played 79 minutes of rugby beforehand.
Nah.
That guy's aerobic fitness is something else. Not only is he at every ruck faster than any other halfback, not only are his passes crisper than any other halfback, but he's yelling at people the entire game, not just his own team. He is whooping every time there's a drop ball. He's chahooing every mistake the opposition makes. Everyone wanted a piece of him. He started scraps with about three different guys. I know that there's some people who say, enough already, Aaron Smith. Nah, man, get amongst it.
Nah, I love it. I love the way he's playing at the moment, the enthusiasm he's showing. And as you say, I mean, to be able to run around for 79 minutes and yell at the same time, that is a tough ass. He doesn't have a break from it, does he?
No, he doesn't. Never. It never stops.
So, no, I'm loving it.
I think we should have an alternative audio feed for Highlanders games just on Aaron Smith. Can you imagine Aaron Smith mic'd up in a game? It would be nuts. But you can see why people hate him. They hate playing him.
Yeah, hate playing him.
And everyone wants a piece of him. He's picking fights with first fives, locks, loose forwards, props. It doesn't matter. He is in the grill and he is annoying.
Would probably have to be the most annoying halfback ever, you reckon, in terms of chat? Possibly.
I think on a par at the moment with Will, with George Gregan.
Oh, yes.
I think on a par with Gregan.
Yeah,
if you ask Justin Marsh about George Gregan, how Marsh he did not actually take a knife out of a sock and stab him is beyond me. But, George Gregan had some great chat. But Aaron Smith's picked up. Would you rather play with Aaron Smith or against him?
No, with, mate. With, for sure. Without him, I hate that sort of stuff, eh? I just can't stand it. I just kind of like...
You'd lose it, eh? If you were playing now, would you have a fight with him? Would you punch him?
Oh, I'd do it.
You'd come in for one, eh? You would come in for one.
Well, he's probably the smallest man on the field. Of course I would,
you
mate.
You would, eh?
Yeah, right from the back, mate.
Who was the biggest player you ever started a fight with?
I didn't start fights, mate.
Who was the biggest player you ever got in a fight with?
I was that person. Because I was playing from so far back, as soon as something erupted, I'd be like, yeah, I'll just storm in there. By the time I get there, it'll be cleared up and I'll be last. I mean, I'll just grab a couple of jerseys and then I'll look tough.
You were that guy who ran 80 metres to hug the try scorer to get your GPS numbers up.
Why else do you think I got my GPS numbers up? So hug the try scorer, run in when there's a fight. Mate, that's at least 80, 100 metres plus. Thank you.
And thank you, Millsy. That's a short ball for another week. Make sure you catch all the Super Rugby action, not just the Kiwi games, on rugbypass.com.